aren't you?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is day two of the 10th Annual Conspiracy Conference in Santa Clara, California. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. And back in the Exhibitors Hall in the Santa Clara Marriott, just before 10 a.m., things still slowly building up. You may be able to tell in the background a little bit less background noise than we heard at the peak yesterday. Still, so many presentations today, but I'm definitely most looking forward to Michael Tesarian, and amazingly enough, my friends, Jordan Maxwell is approaching me, so let's talk to him. I am honored to be sitting here with author, researcher, the legendary Jordan Maxwell. Thanks so much for taking a few minutes to talk to me.
Well, I appreciate you asking, and been quite an experience the last 50 years of watching where the world's going, and been talking about this stuff for a long time, and it's finally, people are finally beginning to awaken to the fact that nothing is what they think it is. So that's what I'm doing, that's why I'm here. I'm not speaking at this particular conference, I just came up to visit some of my friends. So anyway, do you have any questions?
Well, for myself, you know, being, I guess, the new generation of this, you know, conspiracy research, alternative history, you know, whatever you want to call it. And of course, 9/11 was my awakening, as probably most folks my age. I'll be 33 this August.
Right.
Does it feel like more people are?
Yeah,
are?
I think so. I just got back from Europe, and a lot of people recognize me over in Europe, especially Switzerland, and. And I was told that there's a lot of young people all over Europe starting to basically rebel against the status quo. They're tired of hearing the same old news every night, the same old stuff continually. And it's finally dawning on them that this whole monstrosity that we call Western civilization is just the same old stuff every night, same old news, nothing ever changes. The rich get richer, the poor get poorer, the world gets darker every day, and nothing seems to work. And so people are finally getting frustrated enough to start asking, why isn't everything the way it is, and why isn't it getting any better? My feeling is that we are on, I hate to be this brutal and honest, but this is what I believe. I've been looking at this situation since 1959. I started researching secret societies and subversive movements as far back as 59. We're talking about 49, 48 years ago. And I'm totally convinced that the world that we live in today, people have no idea in the world how the world works, how this stuff actually operates, how law operates. People don't understand law. They don't understand government, commerce, nothing. And that's why the masters who run this planet are able to do what they do, because they realize that across the board, 99% of the people on the face of the earth have no idea in the world what's going on and wouldn't do anything to change it if they did. So, I mean, because as long as people have their basketball and sports and the beer's cold, and, you know, and they got television to entertain them, nobody really cares about freedom, liberty, and justice. Nobody cares. As long as their stomachs are filled and they are entertained, then everybody's happy. Well, very soon we're going to discover that we're in serious trouble.
And I think, unfortunately, a lot of folks won't wake up to this until it's on their doorstep, until they're either sick or have lost their job or those kind of things.
And it's way too late then.
There's an
old saying that that destiny comes to those who listen. Fate will find the rest. So if you are destined, if you're supposed to wake up and get a life and start trying to figure out what's going on in the world, that will happen if you're supposed to. But if you're just supposed to sit out there and watch the ball game and drink your beer and relax and enjoy life, then what goes around comes around. You'll wake up one day and find out the world was not what you thought it was, and you were being deceived, and played for a fool, but it's going to be too late when you wake up, because you didn't care about your freedoms. You didn't care about your country. You didn't care about what was going on. Well, now it's too late. So it doesn't matter if you care now. It's way too late.
And it seems that even as the acceleration of more folks are waking up to this, it seems on the flip side, there are even more people staying and getting even more fast asleep.
Even darker and more ignorant as the days go on. So typically, one of the most important things that's happening, in my opinion, today is this oil spill in the Gulf. Because I am persuaded to believe that this very well might end up being one of the most disastrous things that's ever happened on the earth. Because once the Gulf of Mexico is filled with oil, Florida, you know, prides itself, and I'm from Florida originally, prides itself on its beautiful beaches and all that. Well, that's all gone. And then if the oil begins to go around the bottom coast of Florida and gets into the Gulf Stream, now the oil will start flooding out into the Atlantic. And, you know, who knows where this is going to end. But it could mean the end of the fishing industry around the world, the food supply on the earth. And that's just one problem. We got problems galore with corruption, government, the banking collapsing around the world. So I think the whole world is collapsing, and I believe it's a part of what was supposed to happen, because we are so corrupt, so ignorant, and so incredibly stupid that we haven't cared what was going on. Well, now that things are out of hand, now we're starting to wake up and be concerned. Too late. It's way too late. Should have been concerned 35, 40 years ago. You should have been awake a long time ago if you cared about your country and cared about your life and your family. But we've been lulled into sleep watching television and watching the sports. You know, when I was a kid, I was always happy when there was a family coming over to visit my family, because they would bring their kids and I would have somebody to play with as a kid. And after dinner, the women would go into the kitchen and talking, and the men would go in the front room with my dad and his brothers, and they would always tell us kids, go out and play ball. You know, go out and play, because the adults want to talk. I was never one to go out and play. I said, I don't want to go out and play. I want to sit in here and hear what the adults are talking about. And they would always say, no, go out and play ball. Just get out of here. We want to talk. And so in order to get us to go out and play, my dad would get up and say, all right, I'll go play with you. And my uncle would get up, and we love my uncle, so he would get up to play with us. Well, now that my dad and my uncle are going out to play ball with us, we would go out to play. And so, because we want to be with them. And then, of course, 10 minutes out while they're out there, now they're tired, they got to go in. But we're now involved in the ball game. And so we didn't realize it was a trick to just get us out there first and get us going, and then they can go back in. Well, that's the same thing they do in America. They have the president go out and throw the first ball. They have the big movie stars at the ball game. So anytime you're at a big watching on television, the basketball or football or whatever, you'll always see them zoom in on some politicians or some big shot movie star or something. And it's to tell the people, it's to show the people, see, daddy's out here at the ball game with you, and uncle's out here with the ball game with you, and all the movie stars are here, because this is the place to be, right? And so I've always felt, no, this is not the place to be. These guys are out there to persuade me that this ball game is important. That's why they're out here. No, I couldn't care less what the president's throwing out the first ball. I want to know what he's doing at 2:00 in the morning behind my back. I want to know who these people really are. I'm not impressed with movie stars. I've lived in Hollywood for 48 years. I know the industry. I know the Hollywood industry. I know all kinds of movie stars and people in the industry. I'm not impressed at all, period. I know who they are. I know what they're doing. So I'm not interested or impressed with what's going on. I know what's going on behind the scenes. And unless and until the people wake up, they're going to find out they're in serious trouble. This oil spill is just one of many problems. narcotics being sold around the world to young people, religious wars, violence, wars, and bloodshed. We've got serious problems on the earth, and that's not even bringing into the picture the possibility of comets hitting us or meteors hitting the earth or the rim of fire around the Pacific. Have you ever tried to carry a 5-gallon container of water? Or have you ever tried to carry two of them? Fill up 2 5-gallon containers of water and try and carry them. Or carry 4, 2 in each hand. So see how heavy that stuff is, how heavy water is. Well, how much does the Pacific Ocean weigh? And when you start understanding how some areas of the Pacific are 7 miles down, you have no idea in the world how much the Pacific Ocean weighs on the earth. And so it's pressing down on the plates that are under the ocean. And those plates are pressing down on the magma, and the volcanoes are popping up everywhere. Earthquakes are popping up everywhere. It's because the weight of the Pacific Ocean is causing volcanoes all around the Pacific, from South America, Alaska, Russia, Malaysia, California, all around the Pacific. It's called the Rim of Fire. So, you know, there's a very good chance that very soon we might see one of the plates break in the Pacific. And if it does, you're going to see a tsunami you're not going to believe. It's going to it'll wipe across the earth. And so we've got serious problems. Not to even mention all the corruption in governments and wars and crime going on. So as far as I'm concerned, unless it's about time you wake up and find out that life is not what you thought it is. And that's something I've been saying for a long time. This is something you need to remember. Nothing in this world is what you think it is. Nothing works the way you think it does. Commerce and business does not work the way you think it does. Government is not what you think it is. The police department and military is not what you think it is. It's not there for what you think it is. Nothing is what you think it is. And people and highly placed in power know that. I'm telling the common people, you better go back and look at the world you live in, because nothing is what you think it is.
I mean, that's a whole...
We could go on for hours talking about all the stuff that's going on that people don't know. So that's who I am.
So quickly, as we wrap it up here, I guess, if you know, to a sort of new generation, and as this window is rapidly closing, do you have any advice for, you know, folks my age, younger, who are just now awakening to this material? And
I would suggest a couple of things. One thing right off the bat is always question authority. Always question authority. Too many people grow up assuming that somebody's in control, there are the authorities. No, you have to understand the world is run by people. And people always will misuse other people if they can get away with it. And so question the authority. When the president of the United States, who the hell is he? I mean, really, where did he come from? Come on. And the Senate, the United States Senate, and the Senate says this, and the congressmen say that. These guys are a bunch of scumbags that are being paid off like the mob is paying these guys off. So they're not authorities. They're misleaders. You better go back and start reading and understanding how this world works. All government is organized crime. Basically, the governments of the world are big and what we are small. We have the Crips and the Bloods, the gangs, the Mexican gangs against the black gang. Well, that's the same thing as the French gang against the British gang. It's all gang war. It's all who's going to control the resources, who's going to control the money, and who's going to control you. As far as I'm concerned, I don't want nobody controlling me. I don't buy anybody's game. I'm not buying their tricks. It's disgusting when you look at religion, especially. Religion, government, and commerce. All three are one in the same. Business, religion is a business. Government is a business. Commerce is a business. It's all money. It's all control. So I'm saying question authority, period. I don't care how high up it goes. I don't have 10 cents for the Pope in Rome. As far as I'm concerned, I know exactly what's going on in that Roman papacy. And if you just remember that for 2,300 years, the Roman Empire has dominated Europe under the Caesars of Rome and then under the Vatican for the past 1,600 years. So Rome has dominated Europe for 2,300 years. That's why we say all roads lead to Rome. But Europe has dominated the world for 2,300 years. So all the wars, bloodshed, corruption, drug trafficking, all of the stuff that's going on around the earth, you better go back and look at Europe for the last 2,300 years, and you better look at the boss in Europe, the papacy, the Pope, the Holy Father. Because all it amounts to is that the Holy Father represents the old Roman Empire under the Caesars. And they have decided to rule the world, whether the world likes it or not. So I'm just saying to all young people, question authority. There is no authority on earth. There's just the biggest guy on the block who's the bully, and he's got more guns than anybody else, so therefore we all accept him as authority. No, I don't accept anybody on this earth as authority, because I know all men put their pants on one leg at a time. We're all human. As far as I'm concerned, the whole entire superstructure of Western civilization is a very, very dark and corrupt thing. It's about time the people rise up and take back their life and their own sovereignty and their own life and stop depending on these scumbags to lead you. Because look at what they'll, you know, by their fruits you shall know them. Look at where they've led us. They've led us into corruption, violence, wars, stupidity, ignorance. My God. We need to wake up and get a life and get back our own thinking. Start doing your own homework. Start doing your own thinking. Question authority.
That's the advice. That's the word. Jordan Maxwell, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're here with the MC of this 10th annual Conspiracy Con at the Santa Clara Marriott in California. We're talking to Mr. Lobo. Thanks so much for talking to me.
Greetings, Media Monarchy listeners.
So can you kind of tell folks quickly, and we're here by your booth. We're moving out of the way. Just kind of tell folks quickly, you know, what you do. You're my kind of guy.
Well, gee, you know, normally I'm emceeing the Conspiracy Con this year, you know, and we're dealing with, you know, all sorts of things from, you know, UFOs to, you know, government conspiracies to spiritual healing, all sorts of things like that. Normally I'm from the world of science fiction and horror films. I host a program called Cinema Insomnia, where we present, we don't like to call them bad movies. We like to say they're not bad movies, just misunderstood. But things like The Brain That Wouldn't Die and, you know, The Other Brain That Wouldn't Die and Voyage to the Planet Beyond The Brain That Wouldn't Die. And I've got a new program called Guide to the Unknown, which is sort of in the spirit of In Search Of and One Step Beyond, where we're looking at unexplained phenomena and things that are strange, things that are conspiratorial at times. And the first episode of the pilot episode I premiered here at Conspiracy Con, and we showed that last night at the banquet, built around a mockumentary from the 70s called Alternative 3, which deals with the possibility of a secret space program.
I remember seeing Alternative 3 probably several years ago when file sharing became possible. Mm-hmm. And it was always really interesting. So Alternative 3 is, we got to get off this rock.
Alternative 3, right. Alternative 1 was to blow holes in the upper atmosphere to let the dangerous gases out, which is a stupid idea. Alternative 2 was to move the entire population off the underground. And Alternative 3, yes, is to get off the planet. And there's a brain drain where all the, you know, science and technology personnel are just disappearing and becoming part of this program. And the interesting thing about Alternative 3 is that even though that it is not true, at least the documentary is not true, there's a lot of aspects to it that ring so true with so many conspiracies we hear about today. I mean, there's a whole whole segment of it where they're talking about climate changes.
Yep.
There's a whole segment in there where they're talking about a secret space program, and that plays in a lot with, you know, we went to the moon on the backs of the Nazis, you know, and or the Germans, I should say, and there's basically this idea. It's a very attractive idea of, okay, the world's going to end. Let's select who's just right, who has the right qualifications to
wouldn't
go
include
to
you
survive.
And I.
Right? No, wouldn't include you and I. So that lends itself to that idea. It lends itself a lot to just a lot of the major conspiracies of the day, and which is why I think that it is the most dangerous television program ever made, because it did touch on a lot of very true, very scary concepts. And the fact that the Cold War is a sham, mm-hmm. and there's just a lot of things in there that made a lot of people in high places uncomfortable, which made it banned in most English-speaking countries. It's never been broadcast in the United States, and hopefully with Guide to the Unknown, we can change that. I'd love to have more people see that film, because it's a great film.
Do you have a what's the website folks should go to?
There's guidetotheunknown.com.
Excellent.
And if they want just some silliness on a Saturday night, cinemainsomnia.com, and for science fiction, horror, and cult films.
Excellent. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you.
We're here with a couple of folks, a couple of attendees like myself to 10th Annual Conspiracy Con. So we're talking to two folks, and I'll let them introduce themselves, and then we'll get into it. So first,
my name's Shane, and I came from Austin, Texas, basically, to come out to Conspiracy Con, and I'm loving it, man. I think this is the greatest freaking thing since buttered popcorn myself.
Well, and we chatted for probably 15, 20 plus minutes yesterday about Bill Hicks and Doug Stanhope and comedy and all kinds of stuff. But maybe right now we're going to talk about more of the subject at hand. But also with us is the man behind conspiracycrazy.com.
My name is Evangelo Calimanis. Came from Las Vegas, Nevada. Half Greek, half Mexican. Was born in Los Angeles, California. So that's a little bit of an introduction about myself.
So what got you into the conspiracy research?
I started, noticed some, weird Illuminati symbols, which I didn't know there were Illuminati symbols at that time, everywhere, from video games to TV shows to, even your dollar bill on the back. So I was always wondering what that meant, and then I started doing my own research and everything. So I figured out, there was a big conspiracy plot on what everything that was going on, so... I took it from there, started doing my research. I opened up my website now, and it's been getting pretty good hits, and people are going in there and waking up to the truth.
And I think that's the thing with, I guess our, the newer generation of conspiracy research, is that when you find out all this stuff, you kind of have to do something about it. You can't just say, oh, yeah, I know all about this, but I'm not going to tell anybody or do anything about it.
Exactly. Like my brother says, he's like, well, why are you doing this? Why are you telling people? You don't have to tell nobody. Just keep it to yourself and find out. I'm like, no, something's telling me out there that I have to spread the word. I have to wake up other people, Some people need a little push to wake them up, They can't just wake up by themselves. So if you give them a little push, it will help out, and people will start realizing what's going on around them.
And I think it's, a lot of times it's all about planting the seeds. Somebody may not wake up, immediately, but if you can constantly kind of plant seeds to them and maybe tailor the message to maybe what they're interested in, sooner or later at some point when it maybe lands on their doorstep, they're going to realize it. Shane?
Yeah, I think that when it comes to planting seeds, that's the best you can, good analogy for it, but you can't... it's not going to necessarily germinate, but that's not your job. Your job is to just kind of be a Johnny Appleseed of consciousness.
I like
that. But ultimately, it's a matter of whether or not they're, if they're watering that seed with the knowledge of their own investigation and putting it into the light of their own awareness, then at that point it might. So, like I said, I think that the more that you push it, anything, the more they're going to resist, And so what the best way you can do is just kind of present it to them in a maybe even interesting and entertaining way enough that they might open up to the idea. But ultimately, if they're ready for it, they'll take to it. If they're not ready for it, they won't. You know, but any investigator, any author, any researcher, anybody at this conference can't push anything on anybody. And I think that those that do just try to hammer your head over it, then they're just going to basically have people end up hating them for it, because nobody wants to be forced to have to accept anything, you know, even if it's truth. You mm-hmm. can't force anybody to accept the truth because they have their own truth that they're living. So that, I think, is a good message to have when it comes to basically opening up people's awareness to it. People are hungry for knowledge. People are hungry for truth. There's a reason why there's a lot of people at this conference, but there's far many more millions of people that can't come out here for whatever reason that are also interested in that. So I think that truth has its own vibration. If you basically speak your truth, you will get people that will be interested in it. It's just that you can't force it upon them, because not everybody's going to be ready for it. So I think that's the message that I wanted to get across on that. So that's at least what that my experiences have taught me, that you can't force it on people, but generally speaking, if you're people that are curious, people that are interested in learning about it, they're going to find out about it. So,
mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that, if you want to expand on that?
My thoughts on that right now. He pretty much covered a lot of stuff.
You mentioned your brother before. What's been your experience in trying to talk about things like this with other folks? Have you not necessarily? You know, you probably haven't lost friends, but
a lot of people, you know, will start, like, some people, you know, will push back and they don't want to hear about it. They're in their own little world. You know, their life. They think it's perfect, which, you know, it's not. It's going to be a lot more hectic. The things that are going to come and happen, you know. So I'm trying to, you know, I push in. I'm going to piss you off before I wake you up to the truth, you know. I'm going to keep pushing your buttons. And, like, I've done that to a lot of people, a lot of my cousins and all that, and they get real mad. And, no, I don't want. And I just keep pushing the buttons. And now I got some of them telling me stuff now, you know, that, like, I woke them up, you know, into stuff. But I just kept pushing buttons on them, and I did piss them off, you know. I did really piss them off. So that's pretty much, you know, if you want to wake up somebody, just, you know, keep pushing the little buttons until you get them with something that's going to open up their mind.
That's what I find is, you know, trying to find, because everybody has their, you know, their area of interest, and maybe folks who may be resistant to things you've talked about before, that then when they come to you and say, hey, yeah, what's the deal with, and it's like, aha, now I know what you're interested in, now I can tailor, you know, some information to you. You know, for example, when I was visiting family last year, hanging out with my aunt and talking about, you know, different events and things, and she was, you know, interested in listening, and it was only a little later that she finally said, you know, well, I guess I've always had questions about Oklahoma City. It was like, aha, you know, mental note, you know, aunt so-and-so, you know, is interested in OKC, so it's like...
Yeah, I mean, I get people, like, in the course of, in effect, basically riding around in a taxi cab, I talk to, a ton of people every single day that I'm working, in effect, and I'll bring up these things, and ultimately, you know, they try to tell you, well, don't talk politics or religion and all that kind of stuff, but to me, can you imagine how banal and boring and superficial and stupid it would be if all I did was talk about the weather? How about them Longhorns, man? How about these? Boy, it's hot out here. It would be boring for me. So it's a kind of entertainment for me, but it's also a way in which I also think that, you know, half of what I'm doing is really my conversation. And they might be used to people basically just sitting and staring at them like some kook in a rear view mirror, in effect. But, you know, if people think that, you know, and I get plenty of people that probably do, they just don't say it because they're polite, that think that I'm nuttier than a Chinese chicken salad, fine. Who cares? You know, it's like my friends and everything like that, we take it as a badge of honor almost, you know. So, you know, the idea, in effect, is that if you're living in a culture such as that we are, it's amazing to the extent to which how people think alike, because we're in a kind of monoculture. And I think that ultimately with television in particular being the the basis for a lot of people's mind control, in effect, that if that is where they're getting their news from, if that is where they're getting their ideas from, their belief systems, and then, of course, if they're going to the same public schools as everybody else and learning the same kind of histories and the same political science and everything else that everybody else learns, then you can only expect them to be conditioned like anybody else. But there's very few unique individuals in society today. And I'm not saying that I am, but what I am saying is that there's information that is, I believe, unique to what the mainstream has given you. Yep. And were you to basically be a harbinger for truth, you can be a beacon to that. And it'll show, and people will vibe to it.
Yep.
But you can't, like you said, yeah, you're going to get a lot of people that are going to be thinking you're crazy, but, you know, that's not your determination to make. It's like David Icke said, you know, it's not my place to basically tell you what to think. It's not my place to have you like me, you know? Neither is it any of my business of what you think.
Mm-hmm.
What you think is what you think. My only job is to basically speak my truth. And then however you choose to take it is your own. So that's what I think.
So, Evangelo, do you find in your, I'm assuming you maybe have a day job that doesn't relate to any kind of conspiracy stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have an opportunity or an ability to be able to talk about information with folks?
Yeah, I mean, the work I do right now, I lost my job because of all this economic collapse that happened with the mortgage and everything. I was a loan officer, but, you know, the whole housing industry just fell apart, you know? And that's a lot of the stuff that started waking me up before, too, you know, what's really going on. You know, my job was just going down the hill. Everything was going out. You know, I was doing so good. So I had to figure out another way of means to support myself, which I started my own eBay store, you know. I did call it IlluminatiDeals.com. So, I mean, I hooked it up, you know, linked it up all to my eBay. So anybody goes to IlluminatiDeals.com, they straight bounces to my eBay store, and which, you know, I have a lot of products on there that I sell. You know, most of them are used products and everything, but I give them out for a bargain price. You know, people could offer me whatever they think they should pay for the items, you know, and that's how I've been getting, you know, most of my money. That job funded my website and everything I'm doing now with my website, you know. So I thank a lot, you know, eBay and my Amazon jobs that I have,
okay.
You know. And without them right now, I would not know what I'd be doing. You know, I'd be trying to probably working at a McDonald's somewhere, for, you know, for an elite corp, you know.
Yeah. Maybe you'd be working for the guy that's speaking now. I believe his name is Ronald McDonald. So I'd rather work for him than flipping burgers. But I think there's a lot of people here that, you know, really, I mean, if you look at it, you got some people here that have been at this for 40 plus years, for Christ's sakes. You know, and I'm always curious as to how they haven't burned out at this point, you know?
Or just kind of given up out of frustration.
Yeah, but you see, they have to be passionate, very passionate, to be wanting to go about it that long. And I think that, you know, with something like this subject and everything like that, it's, I guess, for me at least, it's hard to maintain the passion for it because you don't really see a lot of major changes. You see changes, but they're not always for the better. So, but I do think that the crowds that are coming out and the people that are showing an interest and the websites that are popping up and the people that have got podcasts and everything like that, that's a sign of encouragement because that means that at least their efforts in getting the message across to people has grown exponentially.
Yep.
Since when they started.
Yep.
One thing on my website, you know, I must have hit some spot somewhere because before you used to type in just conspiracy or conspiracy crazy. Now, you know, if you typed in conspiracy, I'll be like on the third page. If you typed in conspiracy crazy, whichever way, skip, you know, from conspiracy, skip, and then, you know, space, put crazy, my site will come out number one out of 5 million sites. Well, something, I started getting too many hits on my website. People kept coming back, bouncing back to my website. I must have pissed off Google or somebody because they took me off. Now you actually have to put .com under the Google search bar. And that, you know, why even use Google if you have to put .com? You know, might as well just use your address bar and do that. You know, so I did send them an email and I'm like, why did you guys take me off? All they could say is there was something on my website that they did not like that I should take off. But I haven't emailed them back and asked them what it was that they want me to take off. But I think it's most of everything that
probably
I have on there.
And they wouldn't probably be able to say, oh, we can't comment on any specific things. Yeah,
I think what Angela did here was maybe an accidental genius. And what that is that you have what's known as MIMS. And MIMS are basically kind of a locus of information, belief systems, and everything like that, that basically kind of act as a viral throughout the whole body politic. So when people would type in, say, on a web search, hey, I got a... somebody told me a crazy conspiracy,
yeah, exactly.
Then that's the first thing that they would type. They would type in crazy... coupled with conspiracy, because they assumed that it would be, but then his site would come up
and
they say,
come up and
hey,
there is a lot.
Right. And instead of just being, say, a Snopes, like trying to dismiss it and everything like that and shit, I mean, it would be something where you're thinking, oh, well, hey, this isn't so crazy after all. But you see, that's the way most people were thinking about conspiracy, and he, by putting it in his URL, that's what basically got so many hits.
I think you're on to something. Shane Evangelo of conspiracycrazy.com, I appreciate you guys taking just a few minutes here to talk to me. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We're here with Fern at the Brits in Lawful Rebellion table in the Exhibitors Hall here at ConspiracyCon. Thanks so much for talking to me.
Oh, you're welcome. Anything to get information out's good.
Absolutely.
That's what we're here for.
So can you tell folks maybe just a quick rundown on what your booth and a lot of the information that you're covering here?
Okay. Well, the first year we came here was in 2004, and because I live half the time in England and half the time in America, I got to realize that the same thing was happening in America as was happening in the European Union, and the idea then was to warn you about what's coming to you, because people at that time weren't that aware of it. We've been here twice since then, but this year people seem to know a lot about the European Union. They've got the warning, really good. So now we've got a table here, and it's Brits in Lawful Rebellion. And I'm trying to be a bit more optimistic this time and encouraging and say, hey, we're fighting back. I've also got another poster up which says, Together We Can. That's like the American flag, the English flag, together toppling the New World Order pyramid. Because I think that we have to work on this together and be really, really aware of what's happening each side of the Atlantic, because we go down, you go down. If you go down, we all go down.
And it seems, I think, now more than ever, that things aren't just happening in one state or maybe one country, that now all of a sudden it seems all over the world massive changes are taking place, and a lot of populations are saying, hey, this isn't just happening to us here, it's happening to folks across, you know, across the pond and around the world.
That's right. Good old internet. We use it a lot ourselves. We make films. We're videographers, and we film anybody who's got something to say. We don't censor things. We do have a disclaimer because some of it's a bit way out. We offer our stuff for intellectual education and your discernment.
Yeah, the views expressed are not necessarily...
That's right, yeah. But nonetheless, all of our stuff goes on the internet. We make DVDs of everything that we do, give them away, give them out, spread it out. Because, you know, they're starting to censor the internet sites now. We've had our own stuff taken down with copyright claims. Whatever. And you know what? If that ever fails, what we've got left is videographers personally getting information and then personally handing DVDs out to other people to copy, send off. Our circulation of one of our DVDs goes to about four people. They duplicate, send to friends who duplicate. It goes to Australia, New Zealand, across Europe, everywhere. That's the way to do it.
I think so. And you know, I still, in a way, treat the internet as if it were still brand new. And as if it could disappear tomorrow. So not relying on the fact that, oh, it's online, it'll always be there. I still download and archive everything because again, they created it and they can take it away from us, but we're going down to use it while we can.
Oh gosh, it's so sensible. Yes, it is, yeah. And of course, bits of paper, the old-fashioned way.
Imagine that.
Yeah, our table here, I mean, this whole booth here is covered in bits of paper, and everything here was, well, nearly everything was kind of donated. Everything here is free. We just take donations because the important thing is to get the information out to people.
Well, and this is definitely, you know, for folks who can't see it, you know, one of the more eye-catching booths here, and it's almost a collage of newspaper clippings and articles and things, and I see from probably mostly, you know, UK press.
Yeah. I have to admit at this stage that a lot of these are actually quite old news clippings that I've already had because I've been out in America for a while. But nonetheless, you see, they're still relevant now. I've still got the backdrop I made in 2004 and a lot of the flyers from 2004, and they're just as relevant today as they were then.
If not more so.
If not more so, yeah. We've got things here like, say, I love this one of this guy. Just an ordinary guy, used to be a solicitor. They were trying to make us metric in the UK, and they started putting up road signs and footpath signs in metric. So he gets this luminous jacket, he gets a little van and a ladder, and he got some industrial glue and made little kind of squares with the imperial measurements on. And he'd just go out in the town centre, wherever, up the ladder, and slap his sign over there. Hey, presto, imperial measurement back. He's been challenged several times. He's been in court four times, but they can't get him because metric signs are illegal in our country.
I think it's all about sometimes doing kind of creative...
Yeah.
You know, monkey wrenching the New World Order.
That's exactly what this is about. Lawful rebellion. Stay within the law, but do everything you can to throw hurdles in their way. We're like sort of little dogs sniffing around the ankles of an elephant, you know, but we're certainly impeding its progress, you know. And if anybody does little things in their corner and everybody's doing this in their corner, there's a lot of corners, you know. And this builds up into a big network of people fighting back. And I think the more you do it, the more brave you get about doing it. We've got a video playing here also, taken from YouTube. We've got a compilation, people fighting back. And we've got the Free Man Movement going here, which are people challenging the authority of the courts and the police. Various situations where, when confronted by these people, we just cave in and consider that they're right, but they're not always right. You know, so they're questioning and they're causing waves everywhere. It's brilliant how this is going. Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
Is there a particular website or a certain way for folks to maybe get in touch with you?
Well, we don't have a website. We can never afford one.
Maybe.
Never got around to it. If you go onto Google Video site, googlevideo.com, it used to be an uploading video site, not anymore, but they do host all the videos of everybody else now. It's like a search engine just for videos. And look for the name R. Coons. That's letter R C O O N S. O O N E S. My husband, I should know. And all of his stuff will come up, you know. So you can browse through the videos we've done. And we've got a whole range of stuff. We've got UFOs on there and everything. A whole range of different directions people are coming from on this also.
Now that you say that, I do recognize the name R. Coons and have seen it as, you know, a YouTube channel or uploaders on, you know, whether that's, you know, Blip TV or Google Video or, all those ways.
All those places,
yep.
Yeah. We've got more fame than we thought we had.
You never know.
But doesn't that show? I mean, we're just two very ordinary people. We found out there was a problem. We're trying to do something about it, which is to tell people what's going on. And we've just found ourselves in a whole world full of marvelous, wonderful people doing the same thing. And we've met some really important people. And we've sort of got links with them. So if we get information now, we know somebody to go to important that can spread it around better than we can. You know, that's how it works, networking and sharing information. Don't keep anything to yourself.
Absolutely. And I think that's why we're here. Fern, thanks so much for talking to me. I appreciate it. I'm lucky enough to grab a few moments with Dr. Michael C. Kaufman. And your presentation yesterday touched on, quite simply, the fraud of man-made global warming. But what I wanted to grab you for is to, as we just kind of briefly discussed, I'm born and raised West Virginia boy. And the coal industry is, unfortunately, the lifeblood of West Virginia. So the very thing that makes its survival is also the thing that enables its destruction. So,
absolutely. What we are seeing now is a deliberate effort to destroy the coal industry by the Obama administration. I mean, he actually has said this. It's not some sort of conspiracy that he wants to get rid of the coal industry because of the emissions of carbon dioxide that are supposed to be causing global warming, which I discussed yesterday, are not. The question then becomes, what role does coal play both in our environment as well as our economy? Coal right now is the least costly form of producing power, and there is a 1-to-1 ratio between our energy supply and our economy and our prosperity. If we have to double our energy prices, as would be the case if we went to alternative energy, at least double, maybe triple, what we're going to see is a huge drag on our economy. Our standard of living will decline immediately. Every analysis of the cap and trade legislation that's currently in Congress right now has shown that within 2 decades, the average cost of the American people is going to be about $8,000 a year. Mm. That's right off the top of their income, and you have to live on what's left between that and taxes and so forth. So what the role of coal plays is a critically important role, because it costs about 2 to 3 cents a kilowatt hour for coal. It costs about 3 to 4 cents a kilowatt hour for natural gas, which is more expensive and as a consequence is not being used that much. But it costs 5 to 6 cents a kilowatt hour for wind power and up to 35 cents a kilowatt hour for solar energy. So we're talking about something that sounds good on the surface of going green and all the rest, but which will destroy us economically. You're talking about many thousands of dollars per family hit on your budget every single year if we follow through with this cap and trade legislation, or if the rules of endangerment that the EPA has put into place are actually imposed starting next year.
And I think for folks who, I think when I say, you know, even if you believe in man-made global warming, their solutions aren't really solutions for us. They're solutions for them.
They're solutions for them because it'll make them rich. There is no question. Even the National Academy of Sciences say that this cap and trade legislation that's currently in Congress right now, the most it would affect temperature out 100 years or 50 years is about 0.05 degrees. It's not measurable. In other words, we would destroy our economy, basically, put you in the poor form, and would have no environmental benefits whatsoever.
Mm. I think with the situation in the Gulf adds for an interesting backdrop.
Yes.
For this conference, and I think kind of informs
right.
Some of the things that we've been discussing.
Well, one of the things that we must do is enforce the regulations that we have. I'm pretty much anti-regulation because they've been abused in the past. I'm pretty much anti-regulations in most cases because they have been abused. They're not necessary. But there are need for regulations. And the catastrophe out in the Gulf of Mexico with the oil is a classic example. If you go back to the fundamental rule of private property rights protects the individual safety-wise as well as attacks by other property owners on your property. And you can consider yourself even property if you want to. And what BP has done, what apparently they have done, because the analysis has not been completed, is what happened, is that they have been lax in their safeguards. They were operating when some of those safeguards weren't even working, and then the federal government, the regulatory system, did not force them to shut down as they should have while they were making those repairs. Now, it could turn out that it's a totally different problem, but that's the way I kind of understand it right now. And that is a failure, one, of BP and their responsibility to society, and two, on our part of our regulators in enforcing what are probably adequate regulations. I don't think we need new regulations. That's yet to be seen. But they're already talking about having new regulations. And more regulations on top of more regulations just isn't always the answer.
Enforce the laws that are already there.
Enforce the laws that are already there. The same thing with the coal industry.
I was just about to say, we could extrapolate
right.
This out.
The coal industry has a tremendous number of regulations imposed upon them for very valid reasons, as we occasionally see because of the mine collapse or the explosion that we just had last month. What I think needs to be done is more enforcement of those existing regulations. We have some of the safest regulations in the world as far as coal mining. Mm-hmm. Coal mining is a dangerous business. I don't care how you cut it.
Yep.
So we need to enforce the regulations that we have right now.
Mm-hmm. And again, this isn't the time for that conversation, but we could still extrapolate that out further to talk about the Arizona immigration situation.
Right.
It's like, we don't need more. It's like, just enforce the laws that are already there.
Well, you know, everybody's coming down on Arizona for the regulations that they have or just passed, when in fact the federal regulations are already much stronger than those that Arizona passed. The Mexican regulations are orders of magnitude stronger, mm-hmm. and more punitive and so forth. Why are we picking on Arizona for trying to just cut down? They're becoming the murder. Phoenix is becoming the murder capital of the world because of this illegal drug activity and illegal immigration and so forth. They have a right to protect themselves.
And this, again, you know, all these issues are so interconnected, and just as all these issues that we've touched on, there's a larger agenda at play, of course. The immigration situation, of course, is being, you know, it's order out of chaos, and it's going to be used to probably usher in any kind of national ID. And, of course, they're already talking biometric worker ID.
It's all interconnected, and the same thing with the global warming issues I was talking about yesterday. It's part of the global agenda, basically to convince through fear of the American people and the people of the world that they need to have these this supranational architecture of regulations that will basically steal the economy right out from underneath the nations, because it is so punitive that we will lower our standard of living tremendously. I'm almost willing to say it could be cut by half if this legislation goes through. So it's one of those issues where people need to understand that all these things that we're seeing, especially in the environmental area, why we need protections, why we need to protect the environment, we're going way overboard because of political reasons, not because it's necessary environmentally.
Mm-hmm. With this kind of situation, and again, saying for folks, even if you believe in man-made global warming, trying to tell folks that, how's it going to help if you pay your carbon indulgences to Al Gore and Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase? They've all basically positioned themselves to benefit from coming. Absolutely.
At your expense. And it will not help the environment whatsoever. I mean, you can't even measure the benefit to the environment that this will do, but it will greatly line their pockets with cash.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, what would you say for folks, you know, the average citizen, how can we push back against this? I often say, you know, I may not be able to stop the war in Afghanistan, but we can make decisions about ourselves and vote with our feet and vote with our dollar.
I think right now there's two things. We can be environmentally conscious. We need to be environmentally conscious. Recycling, if you think that is important, then do it. Buy an electric car if you want to. Mm-hmm. If it makes you feel better. I don't think you'll ever have a payback from it, but nonetheless, that's your choice. You don't want to be forced into it, however. The biggest thing I think we can do as a people right now is to basically vote as many of the incumbents out of office in the 2010 election as we possibly can, because they are the ones that are doing this to us. They're the ones that are locking up our natural resources. They're the ones that are locking up a 500-year supply of oil that's on the continental United States that we could have access and become energy independent, but they will not allow it. So let's get rid of those people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you so much, sir. I appreciate it.
You bet.
We're here with author, researcher, and a bio much too long to go over, Tex Mars of powerofprophecy.com. Thanks so much for taking a few minutes to talk to me.
James, glad to be with you. It's a beautiful day outside. A lot of wonderful folks here at this conference. I like the subject matter. Some of it may seem light to other people, and then some is very, very heavy, and maybe so heavy in my case. I had one gentleman, I think he was ready to hit me. He was just angry at me. I try to be kind to everybody because I know God has been good to me and taken me slowly. You know how it says in the Bible, precept upon precept? Well, maybe that has happened to me too. Some things, you know, at first I said, this just can't be true. Certainly the media establishment and your media monarchy, the media establishment couldn't be that evil to lie to us, to be so full of propaganda. But, you know, it is.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely is. I thank God for alternative news sources. Millions of people are learning things. When I was younger, I had no access to you had to believe what CBS and ABC, NBC, CNN, because they didn't have CNN
none of those.
Fox
you
when
just
I was
had
a
the
kid.
Three.
And it really was sad. No matter which news program you turned on, it was almost like they were reading the same script. And they generally do today. They have their talking points.
Yep.
You know, Republican, Democrat, and they it doesn't matter. And you try to form things like a Tea Party, which I think there's so many great, wonderful people in, and yet they end up co-opting that with their own leadership. And so then that's taken away, too, from you. And there are a lot of people though, learning this, and they're angry.
Well, and when you see folks like Palin and the like joining with the Tea Party, you know it's over.
Absolutely. Somebody like McCain, and here she is pumping him for senator. She wants to give us the same old crowd back in, the people who've lied to us, who want to really destroy our nation. And here she is right there. And of course, she's a very ambitious young lady, and she knows who we're her butter comes from for her bread, so to speak, and who's buttering it. So, you know, I understand that, but it is sad, and I think we're looking for iron men and women today. Iron men and women.
Well, isn't that the popular film out now? Iron Man is the popular superhero movie now.
Well, I never thought of that. That could be. You know, there was a prophetess back in the 19th century named Mother Shipton. And they say her prophecies were quite, you know, incredibly accurate. She was a Christian person, and she said something that I think really applies today. She said, today, and think if it was true in her day, what it would be in ours, the 21st century. She says, at one time, the ships were made of wood, and men were made of steel or iron. But today, it's the other way around. The ships are made of steel and iron, and men are made of wood. And that's very sad. I think that happens today. I do see, though, in some young people, courage. I met you now. I met Evangelo, another friend of ours that's with us here. And I appreciate that. You know, praise God. When I go to be with the Lord, maybe God has really raised up some troublemakers, holy troublemakers.
I think it's amazing, you know, and I'm a part of, a newer, younger generation of, you know, whether you want to call it conspiracy research or, you know, whatever term you want to apply to it. But, you know, 9/11 was the awakening for myself and I think folks, you know, in my age.
Well, I'm glad.
And that's what hopefully is going to keep spreading the word about things that are going on.
Yeah.
Now, what I want to ask you, your talk yesterday focused on your new film, which is called Rothschild's Choice.
Rothschild's Choice.
Mm-hmm. And it went over essentially the massive amount of Jewish individuals that are replete through the Obama administration.
That's right.
Now, this was something that, and as you just said, you know, it looked like somebody, you know, was really angry at you. And I talked to a gentleman after your talk yesterday, who's somewhat new to a lot of this material, and he was kind of I don't really know what to think of that, or you know, are you anti-Semitic or racist? And that.
Uh-huh.
And again, it's tough, you know, with a short amount of time, you can't go over everything and fully explain and maybe answer everyone's questions in all those ways. One thing I did want to mention, because you know you talked about Rahm Emanuel.
Oh,
of course,
yes.
You know, Rambo, and who's the chief of staff, and of course, his brother Ezekiel, who helped write the Obamacare legislation.
That's right. He works full-time in the White House, Ezekiel.
There was another one that I wanted to mention, or that I wondered if you would mention. Are you familiar with Ari Emanuel?
Yes, he's the number one. I'm glad you're aware of him, because very few people are. Apparently you are. Well, Ari is a very interesting individual, because he's one of the very top level Hollywood producers and money people too.
Yep.
So if you want a big film production, go see Ari and he'll arrange for the money. And he's agenting also for people. So he's really one of the best known people. It's fascinating too. Ari Emanuel, very much a Zionist Jew, both an Israeli citizen and a U.S. citizen. There's some unknown things, by the way. Mel Gibson. He's Mel Gibson's agent. He arranged for distribution of Mel Gibson's movie about the crucifixion of Christ, The Passion, which is, you know, you start wondering about that. Hold it. Wait. But didn't the Jews, didn't the ADL and the others bitterly accuse Mel Gibson of being
and his drunken
yeah, and yet,
rant?
Yet his agent turns out to be Rahm Emanuel, White House Chief of Staff's brother, Ari. Mm-hmm. And the other guy, and forgive me, I met so many people, my mind's almost scrambled now, but the guy that is, you know, bowling for America.
And, Michael Moore.
Yeah, Michael Moore, thank you. Michael Moore claims to be sort of a blue-collar guy. You know, he goes around, you know,
scruffy,
beating the shape, scruffy.
Ball cap.
He's ball cap, you know, sort of skewed on his head. And so that people can identify him. But in effect, I've done a lot of research on these characters. And Michael Moore actually is Jewish, and he comes from a very affluent Jewish neighborhood. His parents are, they're no doubt they're millionaires. So he does not at all come from some blue-collar, ordinary working-class neighborhood or family.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're here day two of the 10th annual Conspiracy Con in Santa Clara, California, and it's my honor to be sitting here talking with author, researcher, filmmaker, Anthony J. Hilder. Thanks so much for talking to me.
Well, it's a pleasure to get our message out to the world. We want to incite a revelation, to bring about a revelation. We'd like you to be informed rather than in the dark, but we don't want to bring you into the light of Lucifer. We want to show you that the light of Lucifer is false and that there is a satanic Luciferian agenda which is set in motion now to reduce the population of the planet by 90% and virtually enslave everyone everywhere for all time.
I guess I consider myself, you know, kind of part of the, you know, the new generation of, whether you want to call it conspiracy research or, you know, however you'd want to call it. 9/11 was my awakening. So in 2002, I started to look into things and started to look at some videos, and 9/11, The Greatest Lie Ever Sold, was one of the early films that really turned me on and not only introduced me to you, but also to Michael Tesserian and so many others, and was one of those kind of pivotal documentaries for me that kind of showed the big picture. It wasn't necessarily just about the buildings collapsing.
Well, the first one we did was Illuminati 911. I started on this on September 11th, 2001. Ted Gunderson and I had discussed the FBI or the FBI and the evilarchy that exists as apparatchiks for the American Illuminati coming back to do it again. We discussed this in 1995. The former head of the FBI in Los Angeles and Dallas, Memphis, and I were doing a film called Reichstag 95. On the set, or before the set, we were talking about them coming back and doing it again. So when it occurred, Ted Gunderson called me, or I called him, I forget which, but we said that we talked about them coming back because they were unsuccessful in 1993. The 1993 job was intended to bring down one of the buildings. It did not. But the fellows who came out to do that, we're talking about the blind cleric and his group, he was Rockman, he was considered to be the number one suspect in the assassination of Anwar Sadat. And then we find him and his entire group of terrorists coming to the United States courtesy of the State Department. You can't get into the United States unless you have a visa. They gave them visas and work visas. Then when they got here, they were infiltrated with John Anticev with the FBI, sending out his man who worked within the terrorist group, and he was wired in giving the information back to John Anticev of the FBI.
Imad Salim.
Imad Salim, right. And Imad Salim says, you know, he said, you know, they're ready to do something here, John. They're ready to do it, but they don't know how to build a bomb. He said, oh, that's no problem. you know how to build a bomb. We'll come up with the money. The money comes from the U.S. taxpayers, which bought the bomb, which went into the World Trade Center to blow the damn building up. So Ahmad Salem, being smarter than they thought him to be, started making the recordings with not just Abdul Rahman's group, but with John. And what happened then? Oh, wow. Right? That gave him the information to protect himself from what was being set up by the FBI. When it came to the court hearing, he didn't go to jail. But it exposed the fact that the FBI actually paid for the bomb, which went in to blow up the building, the World Trade Center.
And even a little bit of that
overwhelming evidence that the FBI and the CIA and apparatchiks of this government did knowingly, willfully, and with malice aforethought blow up those buildings. They were rigged from the inside to come down. Building 7 was rigged from the inside to come down. The British were able to see it discussed on television about the coming down of the building before the building came down. You would have to be deaf, you would have to be dumb, you'd have to be stupid, the blindest of the blind, the dumbest of the dumb, the deafest of the deaf, if you don't get it. 911, the greatest lie ever sold. Illuminati 911. You can go to our website, Free World Film Works, and get it. Free World Film Works, and get it. If you don't get the big picture, you're going to be in the dark.
So then quickly, what would be your advice? I think as things are accelerating, as the window seems to be slamming shut for folks, what's the best thing we can do in our own lives to try and spread this information?
If you've got a website, you pick up some of the stuff from us. We want this to ricochet. The synapse, whatever makes the energy flow to connect. We want an expansion that is beyond imagination. An exponential rise of awareness which will shake and break the barriers that bind and would enslave us. I've got some films here, and you're doing a job. I don't know how many people listen to this show, but if you're listening to the show, I'm going to offer you a deal. I don't know how many. I don't know how many people. I mean, there's 50 people listening to the show.
500? Closer to 5.
Closer to 500.
All right.
To find out, so I can find out, I'm going to make you a spectacular offer that I've never made on any show at any time. I'm going to take 2/3 of the cost off of like a $25 film on Frank and Fed, The Monster Amongst Us.
And that's your latest film?
Yes, and or on Skull and Bones, the Catholic Connection. They sell for like $25 each. If you take 2/3 of that, what is it, about, you know, divide 3, let's say $9. If you say you heard me on this show, we'll send you Frankenfed, The Monster Amongst Us, which is used as a key instrument in the fight to expose the Federal Reserve. Or you can take Skull and Bones, The Catholic Connection, and open up the evils that exist within the Central Intelligence Agency, which is the enforcement arm of the Council on Foreign Relations. Okay, I'm going to give you this website, freeworldalliance.com, freeworldalliance.com, freeworldfilmworks.com. I'm going to give it to you for 2/3 off, or $9.
If folks say they heard this on MediaMonarchy.com.
Yes. 2/3 off. It's not obviously not for the money, but if you're an activist and you pick this thing up, I don't want you to go out and sell it. I don't want to be taken out of business. But you can make copies. If you're in the movement and you want to make a change, you can make 1,000 of these things for $9.
Fantastic. Well, and you were, and we talked about this yesterday briefly, just this past Sunday, you were on Ground Zero Radio with my good friend Clyde Lewis.
Oh, yes. He's a great guy. Great show. Except I am upset that he is not on every night and syndicated.
We're hoping.
You can help do that.
And you were on there talking about your latest film, Frankenfed, the money-made monster. And I think if we look, you know, through the Bush years, it was all 9/11 and terror and war. But now the elites kind of seem to they've moved on to their next operation, which is robbing us all blind, and it's pretty much complete.
It's always been that. If you take a look at on our website, you'll see. By the time you hear this, maybe it'll be put up. We'll have the national debt, and it'll go rat click 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 click. They're screwing us. They're all in the same bed. They're all in the same bed. They're all in the same group. They're all in the same organization from different parties. It doesn't make a difference. They're all in the same bed, but it's not them but us that's getting screwed. You're getting screwed. They're in the same bed. We're getting screwed. How do you figure that one out? You're doing something with this show that's not being done everywhere by everyone. Alex Ansari,
yes,
friend of mine over there, is doing his show up in Portland. I had one guy in Portland who actually screwed me out of this. He took up about $5,000 out of our account. We were trying to put this thing together, and I fired him from one deal, and he walked off with more than just the money. He walked off with the codes and everything on the account. I mean, the website. He's working as a waiter up there in Portland.
Huh.
Jeff. I'll just say Jeff.
Okay.
That set us back, but we're not set back if we continue with you. If you think that you can do this, and then realize, no, I don't really think that I can do it. I know that I can do it. When you stop thinking that you can do it, but start knowing that you can do it, you'll realize that that is what makes the difference. In 1967, when I produced the very first expose of the Illuminati, recorded expose of the Illuminati in the history of the world, there was 18, maybe 19, maybe 25,000 people that heard about the Illuminati in this country. It is now in excess of a billion. It's because you are knowledgeable that you are doing this. And thank you, my friend, for making this thing happen. Frankenfed is being repeated, re-recorded. They're stealing bits and pieces. It's not my fight. It's not your fight. It's our fight. We must incite a revelation to avoid a revolution. For freedom to live, they must die. Politically, their businesses must wither. Their lives must be spent, the rest of them must be spent in prisons.
I tell you what,
if we are to be free, we cannot allow a private group of international banksters and gangsters to control the monetary system. I had in my pocket the other day a $100 trillion note. A trillion is 1,000 billion. It's 100,000 trillion. I mean, it's just incredible. From Zimbabwe. Obama is America's Mugabe. He's Mugabe Light.
When the dust settles, contact
his book, at least the one that he goes by, is called, what is it, Rules for Revolution? Oh, he didn't write it. He just follows it.
Rules for Radicals.
Rules for Radicals. I'm sorry.
No.
Rules for Radicals. You know, and it is Rules for Revolutions. But it is Rules for Radicals. Saul Alinsky wrote the foreword, which is dedicated to his Lord Lucifer. Is there a Luciferian connection between Obama Mama? Yes. Does he follow the dictates of Reverend Wright? Yeah. He's not the guy who says, God bless America, but God damn America. That's the minister of Marx, the minister of madness. The president of the United States, should he be impeached for high treason? Yes. I'll be the first to sign the petition.
And just as the Bush crime family and all their connections, we're only now, I think, trying to spread the information and find out about just as many sinister forces and connections with Obama.
It's the same administration. Obama is simply Bush on steroids.
With a smiling face.
Oh, listen, he's more acceptable. He looks, yep. You know, you think, well, hey, he's doing something for us.
He's a cool guy.
He is doing something for us. You can just put your hands against the side over there, bend over, pull down your pants. He will be doing something for us. In fact, I think he did something with a guy, Larry Sinclair, in the backseat of a limousine, doing some coke and I guess maybe doing a little oral entertainment. I was in Hawaii the other day and a fellow showing me some pictures on the side of the wall. It's a picture of Obama, and then there's, I noticed a couple of chicks naked. You know, I said, oh, there's Obama's girlfriends. I said, I didn't know he was, well, I guess I knew he went both ways, but early years. And then I did doing another interview with a fellow in Redondo Beach and talking about Mombasa Island. And he was saying that he was born on Mombasa Island. That was before it became part of Kenya. And that was part of the Tanzanian nation. And that's, you know, when Dar es Salaam and Zanzibar, mm-hmm. they went into, from Tanganyika, and anyhow, all those things were changed. But he was telling me about Obama's grandfather, Mau Mau. Mau Mau. Whoa. And I'm thinking of the film from which came the movie More, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, ta-ta. You have to look back to look forward. You have to look in to look out. You have to learn to reach out and touch beyond your fingertips. You have to learn to hear beyond the limitation of your ears. Join with us. We have a fight that we must win. We have an option to win or die. The choice is yours. If you're listening to this show, there's an opportunity here.
I like to say, you know, if you're listening to this, you're part of the revolution. You're part of the solution. You're part of the revelation.
Oh, it's a revelation inside a revelation.
Absolutely. Anthony J. Hilder of FreeWorldAlliance.com, I thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, my friend. And God bless you all, but let God bless you. Use your energy. If you go out and you can find these discs at any discount store for about $25 if you made copies of this thing and put them out. And you get the connections between one side and another to another to another to another, and reach out and touch beyond your fingertips. You can expand this from one to a million. A film can be seen by a million before a book can be read by one. Thumbs up. Incite the revelation. God bless you all.
Thank you so much. We're here with Dr. Leonard G. Horowitz. His presentation yesterday really blew my mind. And what I want to ask you, and again, thank you for taking these few moments as we're here in the swirl of the exhibition hall at the Conspiracy Con. This 528, that I'll basically preface it for folks. Something's wrong with the music we listen to. And it's not just the content, although that would be a whole other discussion. Is there a way to kind of quickly break down this 528 frequency for folks?
Sure. You know, we had a standardization in the musical industry. All of the Western world's music is currently being tuned to a standard tuning that is 440 hertz. That's cycles per second. So it's a vibration that's grossly in dissonance with nature. If you look out in nature, most of the botanical world is vibrating at a different frequency. It's vibrating at 528 hertz frequency, which is the equivalent in our scale system to A444. So it's 4 hertz difference. Now, what does that mean? Well, if you're listening to your favorite radio show and you're grooving off a tune, and somebody comes along and changes the dial just 1/10 of a hertz off, suddenly you no longer get the clear channel. You get static. And if you listen to that static, you get kind of like upset, get stressed out. You listen to it longer, you get sick. And if you continue to listen to it, it'll probably kill you. So what we've now gotten used to in the Western world is actually tuning outside of nature into a dissonant frequency that, according to the research that we've been advancing with some of the world's leading experts, it blocks from the throat chakra, that's an energy center in the body, down. The A440 hertz standard tuning blocks the heart. In fact, we now believe, based on a lot of evidence, that 528 hertz frequency is the love frequency. It's that warm, fuzzy feeling you get in your heart when you're in love. That's a vibration. It's a spirituality. It's an essence. And it is what all of the botanical world mostly vibrates to. It's the most powerful of all energies, because all energy sources from the same source, electrons from hydrogen, like water, H2O. In the equation is H plus plus OH minus equals H2O. The H plus is the donor of the electron. The OH, the oxygen, is the carrier of that electron. The entire universe is based on this kind of like yin-yang, positive-negative, charging capacity, or a piezoelectricity. And so musically, these electrons are actually vibrating. And the carrier of that energy has a certain frequency to optimize our health, our longevity. Look at a dog, for example. When a dog gets sick, he doesn't go to a medical doctor. He goes to the field, he starts to chew on grass. The grass itself is a tip-off. Why is it this greenish-yellow color? Why is it exhibiting this incredible intelligent design, this creationistic concept that it is growing to the light? It's not killing itself prematurely by growing down into the darkness. It's greenish yellow growing into the light, and the center, the heart, just like I talked about a minute ago, the heart being this place where love resonates. Likewise, the heart as above, so below, the heart of the creator, or the heart of the electromagnetic color spectrum, is 528. It's the center of the rainbow. It's this greenish yellow color.
When you said that yesterday, it's the center of the rainbow. I went back to school and was like, Roy G. Biv. G. It's right there in the center, the green.
That's exactly right. So this is what we're now understanding. Now, beyond that, my presentation yesterday was on how did we get to institute standard tuning mandated throughout the musical world and the Western world. Of course, the aboriginals, the native populations, the Indians, they don't do that. But we in the Western world have adopted this, and we don't think twice about it. How did we get there? Through war research. Literally, the Rockefeller Foundation funded the science that involved our RCA that involved EMI, which is Abbey Road. Mm-hmm. All of these sound laboratories, in fact, the Princeton Radio Project was involved in along at the same time that the Manhattan Project for nuclear weapons and nuclear energy was evolving. Human energy, which basically is spirituality, which is frequency, resonance, vibration. There was a definitive program to determine what would stress us out maximally and incredibly cause mass hysteria. Quote, mass hysteria was a principal objective. Now you begin to understand how come suddenly, you know, people were swooning over some of the old vocalists, Frank Sinatra, but they weren't rioting as they started to do with Elvis Presley, or you saw with the Beatles. There was a mass hysteria that this music was suddenly creating. Where did that come from? The research indicates it came from this war military research in the institution, ultimately, of 440 hertz frequency, which is suppressing our spirituality, suppressing our love, our heart chakra center, and ultimately creating us to be in dissonance, not only with nature, but with each other.
And is the Princeton Radio Project, this was a question I had in my mind yesterday during the presentation, were they involved in War of the Worlds? Or am I mixing things up?
Yes, I believe
with Orson Welles and the
exactly the Orson Welles mass hysteria that was created. That was an experiment. That was one of the first experiments that socially was advanced, based again on the research. Now, this research that I'm sharing comes out of a document that is currently on the internet. It's a Rockefeller Foundation archive document that's freely downloadable on PDF, and the author is James Tobias, who's a English professor at the University of California. And as a historian working for publication with the Rockefeller Foundation, he shared these little-known truths. And because of my research in 528 hertz frequency, seeking to find how come we're not vibrating in love, how come we are not tuning to A444 instead of A440. Well, I ran into this information, which is shocking. It's stunning, and it, I believe, represents for all the musicians in the world a great opportunity to take their music from kind of like stress frequency into healing opportunity. People literally are healing, just like a dog heals when he chews on the chlorophyll and the wheatgrass, like we get, you know, the enzymes that are rich in the vibrating electrons in that, vibrating in that greenish color 528. We take that into our body. Suddenly something miraculous happens. We come to life. And that's exactly what happens when musicians tune or vocalists sing in 528. People feel tingly. People get breath releases. They have a stress reduction that's noticeable. And what we're doing is currently advancing 528records.com as a website that will be able to transpose any music that has been recorded in A440 hertz into A444, which is the equivalent of C528, making all music then healing music. And it will be just like the concept, the metaphor of throwing a pebble into a pond. The waves go out
to
the farthest ripples, to the farthest shores. Likewise, when we, let's say you, play 528, that music, that ripple of love and reharmonization with nature goes out, and ultimately it creates not just a healing for you, but ultimately, prayerfully, others as well.
And as a musician myself, and I think my audience is probably more into music and things like that, I think this is something that will really intrigue them and I think really open their mind. Dr. Horowitz, I really appreciate the time.
Pleasure. Thank you. Thanks so much for asking me.
We're here with Dr. Stan Monteith of RadioLiberty.com as we're winding down this 10th annual conspiracy conference. And thanks for taking just a few minutes here to talk to me. What I want to mention to you first off is I'm based out of Portland, Oregon, and recently I interviewed a young guy, an author of a book called The New World Order and the Eugenics Agenda, A Christian Perspective. Andrew Hoffman, I believe, was on Radio Liberty a month or so ago, and you guys have his book for sale here on the table. So what I find amazing about all this, again, there's just like a reference Hoffman. He's right up the river in Hood River in Oregon, that we're making all these connections. Do you feel positive about the amount of, I guess, young people being awakened to what's going on?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's really, I'm 81 years old. So what can I accomplish? Well, I can get a lot of young people educated so they'll be able to carry on when I'm not here. And that's what it's all about. We're involved in a spiritual battle. We fought for the survival of Western civilization. And it's amazing to me how many young people are becoming aware of this and are doing exactly the same thing. And, of course, the young man you're speaking of is only one of a number of people who are really having an impact. And I'm just as pleased as I can be. So, and certainly I can tell you people all across the country are doing exactly the same thing.
And I think, you know, or at least myself, you know, not 9/11 was my awakening to all of this, as probably a lot of other folks, you know, that are roughly my age. But we've been enabled by the new technologies, you know, that's enabling us to record this conversation right now. Those are the tools now in the 21st century that now we're able to spread this information worldwide.
Well, you have to understand that for many years, the people who wanted world dictatorship and who have great wealth have actually been buying up the media. They control the major news magazines and the major newspapers. They control certainly the television and radio, at least the main line. There's a book written by a man named Professor Ben Bekdikian, and it's called The New Media Monopoly. And he points out that there are five major corporations that control up about 90% of the major media. So you're not going to get the truth from the regular media, but now we do have the internet. We've never had that before. And of course, we have many people who are on shortwave. We have people that there are satellites, certain satellites you can get on where you can listen to these things regularly, very inexpensively, and you don't have to pay monthly charges. And then, of course, many of us have radio stations. I understand you have, and certainly we have about almost 60 radio outlets every week where our programs are getting out, where at least people are getting some glimpse of the truth. We have the unique opportunity we have never had before because of the miracle of electronics to begin to get the truth out. And people know something's wrong. They're looking for answers, and we have them. Now, I would point out that there are people that the other side has introduced into the internet and certainly onto the radio who are there to discredit this movement. But there is so many good people out there, and hopefully most people are discerning and can begin to see through the falsehood that's being put out by the people who would enslave us. And who are these people? Well, there have been secret societies around since the beginning of time, but they've all had one common goal, and that is a world government, and that is the goal today of the Bilderbergers and the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission and the certainly in the Skull and Bones of the Bohemian Grove, and we could give you the names of so many organizations that are really out there working towards the same goal and objective, because all of them really want to destroy Christianity, want to establish this world government, and behind all of them is this same identical spiritual force that has been here since the beginning of mankind, when, of course, we know that Nimrod, 5,000 years ago, wanted to unite the world, and God intervened. Well, of course, they're trying to unite the world. They're trying to thwart God's plan for us to be individual nations, and with the idea, oh my goodness, wouldn't it be wonderful if we had a world without war? And yet these are the very people who've been creating the wars, and we can actually track, if you read my writings, from the Boer War to the Spanish-American War to the First World War to the Second World War to Korea to Vietnam to the First Gulf War, the Second Gulf War, and now the new war that's coming with Iran. It's only a matter of time before we actually expand the war in the Middle East, and I'm afraid so many American boys are going to die. More boys die totally needlessly. They use these boys as cannon fodder. All of these wars have been fought not for freedom, but to advance this cause of bringing about a one world government. That was the reason for World War I, to bring about the League of Nations, World War II, to bring about the United Nations. Certainly Korea and Vietnam were fought under the auspices of the United Nations. They were no-win wars. They were simply places where you could kill a lot of people to get this build this desire, oh, we've got to do away with war. These are the people who are creating the problems on one hand and then saying, but the solution is a one-world government. And the solution is not a one-world government. The solution is get rid of these evil people. People can live in peace if it weren't for these people who are manipulating us into war.
And you referenced the Bilderberg,
yes,
which, of course, is going on as we're meeting here at the Conspiracy Conference. So we have that as the backdrop. We have the situation with the latest, you know, Israeli attacks with the Gaza flotilla. We've got the BP oil spill and all these things going on kind of as our backdrop here. But I feel almost more hopeful than gloom and doom that in an event like this, we have young, old, black, white, male, female, Christian, atheist. And we've, I think, all kind of come together because we've all seen and are seeing what's been going down.
Well, I think people are looking for answers, and there are answers out there. And we think that through my ministry, we have the answers. And we know a lot of it, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of young people are picking up where we have left off, and they'll go on and advance and come up with information that I never have. But then, after all, I base my research upon what others before me have done. The writings of Professor Carol Quigley, a liberal college professor, who really gave us a clue to the secret society that created the Council on Foreign Relations. And through his writings, we know the Council on Foreign Relations was and is a front for this movement to bring about a one-world government. And then offshoots of that became the Bilderbergers, and the most recent one is the Trilateral Commission, which is really the chief coordinating organization for these people of great wealth and power today, people who really have no moral conscience, but seem to be driven by this desire to bring about a world government. And behind them, I believe, are powerful spiritual forces, whether these people recognize it or not. Some do and some don't. And how do I know that? Well, I read the writings of the people on the other side. Unfortunately, they're so egotistical, they will actually write these things out. And so anybody who'd like to verify what I say, the information's available at our website at radioliberty.com or by contacting us, and we can certainly verify everything we say.
Dr. Stan Monteith, RadioLiberty.com. Thanks so much for talking to me.
God bless, and thanks so very much. Bye-bye.
As we're winding down this 10th annual Conspiracy Conference in Santa Clara, California, I'm really excited to grab a few moments with Michael Tesarian. Thanks so much for sitting down with me.
Oh, no problem, James. It's a pleasure.
And it's funny, you know, when we first met, you know, Friday night, you know, we met at the bar here. And I was just happy to be able to meet you for a few minutes. And then as the weekend progressed, we started to run into each other. And then, you know, I'd see you in the hall. He's like, hey, James, let's go have a cigarette. So I've really enjoyed, I think, our time together off and on throughout the weekend here.
Well, I appreciate, you know, people like yourself coming along and showing an interest. That's what it's all about. That's what these conferences are all about. You're getting the information out, supporting people who are trying to broadcast it. Because, you see, you may have a big message and everything, but if you don't have the platform, in other words, the speaker, to broadcast it to the world, that's completely redundant, you know. So it's a win-win situation. You have to have the information and the research, but you need the broadcasting people to get it out there to the world.
And that's, you know, the analogy of, you know, if a tree falls in the forest and no one's around to hear it, doesn't make a sound.
I'm a big believer in that, because I come from a culture in which in Ireland there's only like maybe 1, 2, 3 of us who are into, you know, that the occult history of Ireland. I mean, I'm very cognizant of how America is miles and miles ahead. I know people bash the place all the time, but as a matter of fact, when it comes to this subject matter, America is rocks. You have these conventions that they have a lot to do to put them on. You know, it's a logistic nightmare, obviously. And then, you know, Brian Hall flies me out, says, you got to be here. I want you to do the second part of your talk. He allows me to do subject matter that wasn't really bookmarked under this, especially after 9/11. People were doing 9/11. They were doing all of that kind of thing and hidden government, and I've done that myself, but I have lots of other things I'm interested in. Symbolism is one of them. He let me do the talk in 2003, and it was called The Subversive Use of Sacred Symbolism in the Media. I put that up on YouTube. Millions of people watched it. You know, so it's a dynamic in which you have 200-300 people in the crowd, or even 400 or 500 at a convention, and 800,000 that month watch it. So, I mean, that's a no-brainer. And then he invites me back this time because we want to do the follow-up of that, which was a fantastic opportunity. And he believed in me back then, because, as I say, it wasn't people. See, you wouldn't think that now, but in those days, people didn't understand what's advertising got to do with any of this. So I made my sales pitch. He thought about it for several months and got back to me and said, you know something, do it. You know?
Well, and I have to say, you know, my awakening to all this was around 2002, 2003. And that talk from the 2003 Conspiracy Con was probably the first place I ever became familiar with your work. And I loved it.
That's my point.
And I shared it with folks. And I think your work and Jordan Maxwell really kind of breaks down, you know, the language and symbolism and the words that we use. And just as you said today in your talk, you know, spell. We spell words. So you're casting a spell. And again, it's the Mad Men, the Madison Avenue men.
That's right. That was brought out by Alan Moore, as a matter of fact, the great writer and animator.
Hmm.
He was the one who spoke about that, talking about the hidden meaning of the word spell, and you're casting a spell, and that the word grimoire is just a Latin word for grammar.
Hmm.
You know, that there's a connection between the magical arts and just simple things that we use, like Mercury, the god Mercury, represents speech, for instance. So in other words, there's an occult underpinning. As you rightly say, Jordan has gone into this in great depth. I've done work on this. But you're right, again, by I think it was the subversive symbolism upload, and then, of course, this talk I did in 2012 got so many hits. But what it also did, the symbolism one was special because it basically began infesting the net with other people, younger guys, you know, getting into it big time. You know, maybe if I'd have continued doing other things, it wouldn't have caught on as much. But symbolism opened a lot of people's eyes. I saw it happen with the kids that I used to teach on this, and then we saw it on the cyberspace, in which now there are so many blogs and uploads dealing specifically with the occult, Masonic, Illuminati symbolism within movies, within album covers, and bands and music. And neither me or Brian could imagine that, you know, that day. And in fact, we were sitting not far from where we're sitting now when we discussed it. And neither he or I could ever imagine that that would happen. I mean, I had no idea that it would take off like that. And I got more emails to this day on that particular subject. And what does that tell us? That tells us something amazing. You know, that these people leave loopholes. And because all of the symbolism is split up in time and space, you don't really see it. But when somebody like me comes along and compresses it into a format, then you see these occult, you see the thread.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's non-negotiable. Then only a complete and utter retarded person wouldn't notice that there's something going on here. Pyramids, pentagrams, solar symbols, decapitated women. You know, what is going on with all of this? When it's all split up in the ambiance of the world, yeah, I can understand why people maybe don't see what makes it so important. But I've been studying this since about 1980. I did a little bit of it in 1980. I got slowly introduced to it, but it was about 1985, 86 that I started to really give it a lot of thought and attention, collecting magazines, collecting logos and symbols. We didn't have computers then, of course, so it was all hard copy. And then as time went by, I continued doing it, and just it's been a constant process moving on to then watching movies and listening to the lyrics, actually listening to lyrics and wondering what they actually mean. I've been doing since like 70s. It's always been fascinating to me what's being said in certain songs. And then my brother and I had a real fascination in album covers.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically with a couple of groups like Roger Dean, Rodney Matthews, these famous album cover artists.
Uh-huh.
They
did a lot of the a lot of the 70s prog,
yeah.
Pink Floyd, Yes,
and so forth.
ELP.
Yeah.
And
then there's a group called Hypnosis, who's three gents from the art schools in England, and their album covers to me always were extremely aesthetically beautiful, but had a very sinister. You know, again, this is just from me. People don't need to believe it. But I always felt there was something very sinister and odd. And my background is in art. Not that I'm an artist, but I've studied art history all my life. And I don't know what it was. I just started to notice there was something uncanny, something weird. Later I would know. I would be able to put language to it. Oh, this is occult. This is from this tradition, or that's Masonic, or whatever. In those days, it just was a sort of a visceral understanding that these album covers mean something. Why was this image chosen for this album? You know, why did they do that? I was really fascinated by it. And then if it was a band that also had these sort of occult lyrics, that also got me even more deeply interested. And then there's very positive bands out there who have very spiritual artwork. It's just transcendent. And that also interested me. And it wasn't until I came across the work of Jordan Maxwell, you see, that the real light started to shine and the dots started to get connected, that look at what you're looking at here is a huge industry, a very well-rehearsed, planned thing that these record companies have, these art directors, and they're the noise, they're the head honchos. The art directors, you do what they tell you.
The bands aren't necessarily in on it.
The bands have almost no say, and this is in fact why Bob Dylan or somebody else will go to the length of trying to, you know, get control. Because even those guys are told, no, we're going to put on this album cover what you feel like, what we tell you, not what you feel like. And the people like Pink Floyd and the Moody Blues, they wouldn't take that. They go, the hell you will. We want the album covers to go with our lyrics and concepts. Jethro Tull, you see, there's bands that just would not accept this.
And only a few probably big enough to be able to say no and get away with it, you know, as you know, the sales of a band like Pink Floyd.
But then the damage can already be done. Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath will tell you that when the first album was released and they found the upside-down cross in the album, they were blown away because they knew that their parents would go stark raving mad. You know, the girlfriends and their friends would just think, you're a bunch of Satanists. You're not a bunch of Satanists, but what's all this about? And he had to emphasize that this was the record company's deal, but the damage is already done. They're not going to say, oh, sorry, guys, we made a mistake. Let's take it all back. So maybe you change your imagery down the line. Or maybe you just go, look, we can't stop it, let it go on. But even if you wanted to change it, the damage has already been done. That people are thinking you're this and you're not. So anything you're going to say after that point, it becomes almost redundant. They won't hear it.
So yeah, you're talking about Black Sabbath, the first one. You know, when I saw that when I was young, it's like, oh my God, that's scary looking.
Yeah, I know. So this has happened time and time again. And then what happens is people who are not going to study it get confused by thinking that really satanic bands or whatever, they lump them all together. And then they lose the discernment to say, no, just because this is an occult symbol, you know, read into it. It may mean more things than you think, but try to discern what is really sinister. So in fact, I learned this because then I started to see that in the Duran Duran, sweet, cheesy, lovely, gorgeous, glowing video from the Communards or the Smiths, or I would see unbelievably evil images and suggestions in those poppy things.
So, like what? I'm a huge Smiths Morrissey fan. So what kind of thing, if you can recall,
no,
that Smiths was? Okay.
I can't recall specifically, but I know that when I studied it, I had them bookmarked. I mean, not the band per se. Uh-huh. It would have been whoever the record label was and who's affiliated with them.
A lot of these we're talking about are pretty much Warner Brothers, whether that's Black Sabbath, yeah. or at least, you know, the U.S. distributor of the Smiths was, you know, Warner Brothers. Reprise, Sire, you know, it's all owned by Warner.
Island Records, I'm suspicious about them, you see. And then again, it's the art directors who they're calling in, their knowledge as well. It's the same complaint I have against Madison Avenue. That doesn't mean that the merchant who wants his logo cut out of Perspex or a nice design in a magazine is the guilty party. He hasn't the faintest idea what symbolism means. He believes what the Madison Avenue agent is saying. Yeah, we tried this, it'll sell. This is the color that'll sell your product. Okay, go ahead. And then they see record sales, so they're not going to complain. Which is why some of these bands go along with it in the end, because they go, wow, that really worked. But they're not ideologically in the same boat as these weird, sinister, shadowy types. But yeah, it's difficult to fight it. But you have to gain the discernment. I started noticing in the top 40s, like Erasure and Communards are using all this communistic left-wing symbolism. We know that the punks use it. We know that Sid Vicious wore the hammer and sickle. Why pick that symbol? Everybody thinks it's cool. Yeah, but it is cool. But then what's behind it? Who is Malcolm McLaren? Who does he work for? You know, so we have these. I would ask all these questions because I'm very deeply into this stuff. I want to know what these symbols mean. When you see the symbol for the band Rush, you know, or whoever it might be, I'm fascinated by symbolism. I've always loved it, and I want to know what effect it's having on my mind. And then now, way down the line, I've got the language to say, look, no matter what the symbolism is out there, if you've built up the symbolic literacy, then you have a kind of immunity. So even if it turns out to be something quite negative, you know, it's not going to affect you as much as it affects the other person because you're informed. Just like I was saying at the conference today, knowledge is everything. Because all there is in this life is knowledge and ignorance. Socrates said the greatest ignorance, the greatest evil is ignorance, the greatest good, knowledge. And that's you know, you can stop right there.
Friends, we're winding down this 10th annual conspiracy conference in Santa Clara, California. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, James Evan Pilato, and we're stealing a couple quick moments with the founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, Richard Gage. Thanks so much for talking to me.
It's great to be here talking with you.
And it's to tell folks it's ae911truth.org for
yes.
More info.
That's our website.
Can you just maybe break down quickly, if possible, how you were turned on to this and got into this.
Yes. Well, about 4 years ago, I was listening to the radio on my way to a construction meeting. I've been an architect for 20 years, a member of the American Institute of Architects. And I was working for a local firm here in the Bay Area. And David Ray Griffin was on the radio. And this is a KPFA, Free Speech Radio, here in Berkeley. And he's talking about something else bringing the Twin Towers down other than what we're told, which is the planes flying into them, a large explosion of jet fuel, a large fire that structurally weakened the steel, and then the building coming down in the manner that we saw it come down. So the problem is that I had never heard anything like this. It was like being hit by a 2x4 and saying, well, wait a minute, if this is true, then everything I thought is untrue. Everything, all of our whole society believes that these buildings were brought down by 19 fundamentalist hijackers. What's going on here? Anyway, I checked it out. It turns out I saw him speak that night. Actually, they were sold out. I had to go home and watch on the internet. And it was amazing. So I did more research. I actually watched Stephen Jones, who had a presentation. I took his PowerPoint. I gave it to people at work. I bribed them. I gave them pizza and salad if they would listen to me. 15 of them. They thought I was nuts. 14 of them signed my petition after that. It was, and it's been like that ever since. What do we know? Well, we know that there was a third building that collapsed into its own footprint on 9/11. This was a 47-story skyscraper not hit by an airplane. That on the afternoon of 9/11, this massive building, the highest building in 33 of our states, begins a symmetrical free fall descent straight down almost into its own footprint. This is seen only in classic controlled demolitions. And every architect and engineer I show this building to, now mind you, this is the third worst structural failure in modern history, and yet most all of them, including myself at the time, 4 years ago, knew nothing about it. We're not told about this building. It's as if the media has the power to draw the curtain over huge things like this. It's extraordinary. Anyway, when I show it to them, they go, oh, of course, this is a controlled demolition. Well, did you know what happened on 9/11? What do you mean? Did you know there was more than two towers? No. That came down on 9/11. So they're surprised, they're shocked. They know intuitively it's a controlled demolition. When we show them the rest of the evidence, such as the witnesses of explosions at the beginning of the building, the witnesses and first responders seeing molten metal flowing like lava, they say, this is extraordinary evidence, and yet they knew nothing about it. The FEMA report in Appendix C of the World Trade Center 7 FEMA report cites the melting of steel, intergranular melting, rapid oxidation, sulfidation, evaporation of the ends of these beams. This is extraordinary evidence that when NIST took over the investigation in May of 2002, they ejected all this information from their World Trade Center 7 report. So it's a complete cover-up. And architects really get upset. So we now have, when you hear about this, so now we have 1,000 architects and engineers. Actually, 1,200 at this point. We had a press conference at 1,000. We explained the entire set of evidence that's on our website, ae911truth.org. And we weren't able to get major press to come. They will not cover this story.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's the day after the end of the 10th Annual Conspiracy Conference in Santa Clara, California. There was so much going on yesterday and captured so many interviews that you've just now run the gauntlet and checked all of them out. The difference being, day one, you guys pretty much heard everything I recorded, unedited, and put it all up for you, and met the goal of putting that out and uploading it for folks on the day of the event, which is sort of a goal for myself, and I'm glad that I met that for you. However, day two was a different beast altogether. As you've just heard, a massive amount of interviews. There was no way I was going to be able to compile and edit all those things last night, of course, also being just kind of worn out from the weekend's events. I got long interviews with Tex Mars as well as Michael Tesarian, and I was only able to give you a brief snippet, so hopefully coming very soon you're going to hear those entire interviews by themselves as standalone podcasts. So we're back on the road. We're in Northern California, and again, a little bit of a delay, but had to get back on the road and, of course, get a little bit of sleep and clear my head out. We're in Northern California, and it's Monday afternoon now, again, the day after the end of the conference. Just about to get back into Oregon on this epic road trip. And I guess so many things I'd like to tell you and all the little interesting interactions and folks that I met at the conference. Fantastic. And we'll go probably into greater detail, and I'll maybe relay some anecdotes and things when we get back on the air later in the week with episode 173, I believe, from MediaMonarchy.com. And what I want to do is give a huge, huge thanks to my man Ron Patton. He is in the driver's seat, quite literally, right now. He's the one who made this happen. He's the one who invited me along and really helped facilitate a lot of those interviews you guys just heard. Myself, sometimes maybe being a little more reticent, not wanting to go up to folks. Ron was familiar with a lot of the folks and has met them at previous years. Throughout the years, he was able to set up a lot of those interviews, be it Anthony Hilder or some of the other folks, Jordan Maxwell. It was fantastic. So, Ron Patton, conspiracy researcher from Olympia, Washington, publisher of MK Zine, former writer for Paranoia Magazine. I'm going to let him say a few words about this weekend's events.
Thanks, James. Yeah, I had a great time. You know, I've been to the conspiracy conference. This was my fourth time. And it just seems to keep getting better each time. And I think the turnout was actually better than last year, you know, considering the economy isn't too great. And, you know, there was a nice mix of people, too. You had your regulars, and there were not a lot of new faces as well. And so last year I took, I brought Harry Sweeney from ProParanoid.press. He's a pretty prolific writer on surveillance issues and political control technology, and so he got to meet Brian William Hall, the producer of Conspiracy Con, and so this year he actually got to speak. So basically I just kind of helped with his table and helped sell a few books while he spoke, but yeah, I think all in all it was a huge success, and I really enjoyed getting to know you better, James, and you know, hopefully we can do it again next year.
And again, I thank you so much. And we've already talked about next year, maybe getting a Media Monarchy table and can have perhaps some DVDs, maybe a compilation of some of the New World Next Week videos, or some T-shirts and bumper stickers and all kinds of things. And it'd be great to go back for another year. Fantastic stuff, and again, a lot of this is going to spool out probably over the next several days from MediaMonarchy.com. Met a lot of great folks, got a lot of great materials, autographed copy of the massive tome from Tex Mars, Codex Magica, got a complimentary DVD from Dr. Leonard Horowitz, his new documentary, Pharma Whores, basically exposing Penn and Teller, Showtime, and the media pharma industrial complex. We're going to check that out and write a review, write a quick capsule review for Dr. Horowitz, and we'll get that all up. And again, that's really what all this was about, was meeting folks and making real connections in the real world. Gave out tons of business cards, and again, I hope to see a lot of new listeners and a lot of new visitors to the website. And again, always never hesitate to get in touch anyway, Twitter, Facebook, on the website, any comments, anything, they all come directly to me. Of course, you can always contact me, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. And I believe that's all I want to mention for you guys. Again, I'm sure I'll think of more anecdotes and interesting stories and things as we continue through the week. So I hope you have enjoyed all these exclusive interviews and broadcasts and podcasts from MediaMonarchy.com. I really enjoyed it, and I like keeping things moving forward and progressing as we try and spread all this information. So my friends, I thank you. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you, as always, my friends, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, the New World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail Media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.